WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC for one final hour from St. Paul, Minnesota. Then our long convention nightmare. No, it was no nightmare. It was really fun and really interesting. And I think we learned a lot about people from all over the country. I really like doing the delegate profiles. I hope you enjoyed those. And we have a video file. I just thought some of you might like to know this. We have a video file on our website of all the delegate profiles. We were videotaping them even as we were interviewing them. And we have a page at WNYC.org with all those delegate profiles, and we see that hundreds of people have been going and checking those out, but you might want to do that. For those of you who never get out of Brooklyn, you can meet people from all over the country and hear a little bit about their politics, and I think that was one of the most interesting and probably useful for you all things that we did by coming to the two conventions. Now, of course, one of the big things is to separate fact from fiction when you are covering convention speeches. It is rhetoric and hyperbole, attack, 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 founded or not, promote, based on claims, founded or not. And as we try to separate all these things out, we've been getting various visits over these last 2 weeks, as you've been hearing, from a couple of fact-checking gurus. And joining us now is Brooks Jackson. He is the director of the Annenberg Political Fact Check. And he's here to talk with us now specifically about how McCain's speech fared on the honesty scale. Brooks Jackson, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for doing this with us.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
Let's see now. We have some clips that were just handed to me. Are these ones that you identified? Should we talk about the taxes and health care clip first?
Sure. I'm not quite sure which ones we're picking, but go ahead and we'll go from there.
All right. So let's go to this first. McCain talked about Obama on taxes and health care.
My tax cuts will create jobs. His tax increases will eliminate them. My health care plan will make it easier for more Americans to find and keep good health care insurance. His plan will force small businesses to cut jobs, reduce wages, and force families into a government-run health care system where a bureaucrat stands between you and your doctor.
All right, Brooks Jackson, there were a few claims in there. In fact, we had Joe Klein from Time Magazine on last hour to react generally to the speech, and he did a couple of truth-busting moments just from that one 43-second clip. What did you hear?
Well, for one thing, Obama's plan actually has an exemption for small businesses. So he has subsidies for small businesses. But more importantly, McCain here is confusing what he calls a government-run system with government-subsidized health insurance. What Obama's proposing actually is to for those who don't continue to get their health insurance through their employer, is to offer them something like what House and Senate members have now under the federal and all federal employees under the federal employee health benefit system. So that's quite misleading.
He would maintain the private health insurance system,
and people, whether exactly.
government subsidies to help people buy into it, that would still not put a bureaucrat between you and your doctor, as far as I think anyone has reported on the Obama health care plan.
No more than what we have currently with insurance company bureaucrats standing between you and your doctor sometimes, but that's another matter.
All right. McCain also said he would rationalize tax credits. What does that mean?
Well, you heard him make some grand pronouncements about his energy program last night. He was talking about a huge program to get us independent of foreign oil. It's absolutely true that he would promote nuclear power. He's promised 45 new nuclear plants. He famously wants to drill in places where Obama and other Democrats are reluctant to drill for oil in the U.S. But he also talked about tidal power, wind power, alternative fuels. If you actually look at his program, there's very little specific in there about what he would actually do to bring about the sort of green energy that he likes to talk about. He would have tax credits for zero-emission cars. I'm not sure if any of those exist yet, but it would be a good thing if they did. But aside from that, when it comes to wind power, and he shows these wind turbines in lots of his commercials, as though he would have something to bring those about, what he talks about is rationalizing current tax incentives. In other words, no new money. And when you ask, what do you mean by rationalize, they say something like, well, we mean we would make them rational. But when you ask the wind power lobbyists, as we did, what do you see in McCain's program that would actually encourage people to buy your wind turbines, they say, we can't figure it out.
Hmm. And now McCain also lobbed some criticism at Barack Obama for his voting record when it came to alternative energy resources. Let's hear that.
We lost their trust when, instead of freeing ourselves from a dangerous dependence on foreign oil, both parties and Senator Obama passed another corporate welfare bill for oil companies. We lost their trust when we valued our power over our principles.
We lost their trust when both parties and Senator Obama passed another corporate welfare bill for oil companies. What bill was he referring to?
He's referring to the 2005 energy bill, which started off as the Bush-Cheney proposal, but was very different by the time it was passed. Hillary Clinton, by the way, attacked Obama for this. She also voted against it. The fact is, if you look at the Congressional Research Service, which has done a very good analysis of this bill, it did give about $2.6 billion in tax incentives to the oil industry, oil and gas industry, but it also, get this, took away $2.9 billion from the oil and gas industry. So it was a net tax increase of about $300 million over a decade on the oil industry. How is that corporate welfare? It also included, by the way, and this is the reason Obama says he voted for it, $5.8 billion over 11 years for tax incentives for renewable energy and energy efficiency and alternative fuels. So it's true Obama voted for it. McCain voted against it. It was a very complex bill. Characterizing it as corporate welfare for the oil industry is quite misleading. And by the way, McCain proposes to reduce corporate tax rates overall. And the Obama folks love to point out that when it comes to the oil industry, that would give them a $4 billion tax reduction.
And it is interesting, though, that Obama voted for that bill and McCain voted against it.
That's true. That's true. Obama voted for it, he says, because of the incentives it had for green energy. McCain voted against it because he said it was too generous to the oil industry. Even though it did take away tax incentives, he didn't want to give them anything.
All right. There is more here on energy and the environment from Senator McCain's speech and also Sarah Palin's speech. Let's listen to another clip.
Senator Obama thinks we can achieve energy independence without more drilling and without more nuclear power. But Americans know better than that. We must use all resources and develop all technologies necessary to rescue our economy from the damage caused by rising oil prices and restore the health of our planet.
What did you want to fact check there, Brooks Jackson from the Annenberg School?
Well, not so much a fact check, but a comment. If you recall, the night before, Sarah Palin had gotten a big laugh out of the Republican delegates when she referred to Obama's promise that he would, or remark, that he would heal the planet, and she threw in and part the waters as though...
Now, wait a minute. We have that clip, so since you referred to it, we're going to play that clip right now. Here's Sarah Palin from Wednesday.
What does he actually seek to accomplish after he's done turning back the waters and healing the planet? The answer is to make government bigger and take more of your money and give you more orders from Washington and to reduce the strength of America in a dangerous world.
I love the booing. I don't think there was as much booing at the Democratic convention. I could be wrong.
I haven't measured that, so I can't say. But here we just see a little bit.
We're going to have to get a boo. You've got the truth-o-meter. We'll have to get somebody with a boo-o-meter to come in.
Right. Well, here you have an example of a bit of an inconsistency. Obama's being criticized for saying that he would heal the planet, and everybody laughs at that. The next night, McCain says he would restore the health of our planet, and no laughs at that. So there may be some distinction that Republican delegates see between healing the planet and restoring the health of the planet that escapes me, but we just thought that was an amusing discrepancy.
All right, let's see. What else have we got here? McCain also made the claim that he has the, quote, record and scars, unquote, to prove he can lead where Obama does not. Do we really know how many scars Obama has?
I don't. I have not been in the Senate gym with either of these gentlemen. Don't want to be.
But you know what? That's a fair claim, right? I mean, with McCain's POW experience, we don't really want to go there too much, do we?
Well, it's. I mean, you can see John McCain in all his public appearances is unable to raise his arms even level with his shoulders, and because of the severe injuries that he received. So yes, he has scars, physical, and I think he's also talking about metaphorical scars. He's certainly angered a lot of members of his party over things like his campaign finance bill going against the President Bush initially on tax cuts, things of that sort. So he has political scars too, and he's been at it longer than Obama.
By the way, we have a caller who says that Obama was once on the board of your organization. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. I think what the caller is referring to is 10 years ago, there was more than 10 years ago, the Annenberg Foundation gave an enormous amount of money to try to improve public education, the Annenberg Challenge. That was $500 million went, some of it in Chicago. Obama was on the board of the group that the city of Chicago put up to spend that money and try to improve education in Chicago. It didn't work. Produced no significant change in education. The only connection here is that the Annenberg Public Policy Center, which is our parent, does get also some grant money from the Annenberg Family Foundation. But we came into existence in 2003, the factcheck.org, my organization. The Annenberg Challenge was that Obama chaired. That was all over maybe a decade before we even came into existence.
So basically Obama was just on the board of another organization that got funded by the same funder that funds you.
Correct. A decade earlier. So the name Annenberg is the only connection here. Obama has never had any connection with our organization or with Annenberg, except for spending the money that was given to the group the city of Chicago set up to receive that money and to raise matching funds and to try to improve education in Chicago.
All right. But since somebody called that in, I felt that we needed to be direct and clear that up. So guess what? We are out of time. Brooks Jackson, director of Annenberg Political Fact Check. We did Fact Check last Friday with another guest after the Obama speech. We did it again today after the McCain speech. Thanks a lot for joining us for this.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC from St. Paul, the scene of the Republican convention. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC in St. Paul on the morning after. And if you're following the presidential campaign, sign up for our podcast, Digesting Politics. Every week, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I talk about the race over lunch and send it to you for free. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. We recorded one here in St. Paul. Sign up for free at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, as we did last Friday, we are going to meet up here with Paul Ekman, an expert on facial expressions and body language. He's been watching the speeches and the crowds at the conventions all these 2 weeks, and he's here again to highlight some of the subtle messages that he saw below the surface. So, Paul Ekman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
And before we get into the content, I just want you to reset again for our listeners this specialty that you have, which is called micro-expressions.
One of the things we look at. Micro-expressions are facial expressions of emotion that are very fast, about 1/25th of a second. So unless you've been specially trained, and we do give that kind of training to TSA and other law enforcement agencies, but unless you've been specially trained, you won't see them. But they will influence your overall impression. But I'll also comment on some of the gestures, because we look at gestures or body language, mm-hmm. not just facial expression.
Okay. So let's see. We have a clip here of Rudy Giuliani that we're going to start out with here from the Giuliani speech on Wednesday night. And you're going to go from the words to the body language. Let's listen to the speech.
Nearly 130 times, he couldn't make a decision. He couldn't figure out whether to vote yes or no. It was too tough.
Paul Ekman?
Well, Giuliani was having a wonderful time. I have never seen a politician laugh so many times during a speech. He was really having a good time.
And, I noticed that, too. He loved his own speech.
He really did. And usually you don't laugh at your own jokes, but he did, and the audience liked the jokes and liked the attacks. Now, when he made that particular comment, he did a very extreme. He opened his eyes wide. He raised his eyebrows up, and he made a hand gesture. And you usually don't see things that broad on television. That's what you do when you're speaking to a crowd, where you want the people at the back to be able to see you. So it was very large, unusually large, but it didn't matter. They wanted to hear what he said. They loved what he said.
Well, that, of course, was, I mean, in a way, he's talking to two audiences at the same time, and that's one of the tricks for all the politicians at these conventions. These are rallies of their faithful and big rallies. The Denver event where the Nuggets play basketball and of course, the big stadium speech for Obama, and this event where the Minnesota Wild play in the National Hockey League. And just to set that scene a little bit, It's an arena. It's smaller than, say, Madison Square Garden. I don't think they've got the 20,000 seats in there or so that the Garden has. Maybe one of our Minnesota folks in here. 12,000? 17,000? Oh, so it is almost as big as Madison Square Garden. 17,000 seats, I'm told, by an actual Minnesota person sitting across the glass from me. So almost the size of Madison Square Garden. Maybe that would bring out those facial expressions, but he didn't remember that he was on television.
And right in that stadium where he was talking were these huge TV screens. So people saw him much larger than life. And he was giving the expressions in terms of size that you would give when you're not being shown to an audience larger than life, but you're talking to a crowd of people. There's no TV and no blow-up But it didn't matter. It was just unusual to see things that broad, that big on TV. Mm.
By the way, Chris here from Minnesota, do people like the XL Energy Center? It seemed to me a very nice place to watch a sporting event. It seemed to me that's why I thought it great hockey venue, says Chris Beagle, our engineer here at Minnesota Public Radio, which is what it looked like to me. And that's why I thought it was smaller than it actually was. It has a very intimate feel when you go into the hall. So that's a little shout out to the XL Energy Center here at the end of our week in St. Paul. Let's go on to another clip. You'll take us behind the speech to the body language. This time it is Sarah Palin.
And a writer observed, "We grow good people in our small towns with honesty and sincerity and dignity." And I know just the kind of people that writer had in mind when he praised Harry Truman. I grew up with those people.
All right. What were you watching as we were listening?
Well, what Sarah Palin did in this speech that everyone agrees was very effective, but she showed three micro expressions of disgust, one in this and two in other segments that follow this. Now, there are two ways you can show disgust on your face. One is by wrinkling your nose and dilating your nostrils, and she did that twice, but very fast, about 1/25th of a second.
You and noticed that somebody dilated her nostrils for 1/25th of a second?
Yes, I've got X-ray vision. But I also did replay, just to confirm. And then
TiVo.
She also just raised her upper lip, squaring the upper lip. That's the other way we show disgust. But she didn't do these for a second or two. It was for a 25th of a second. So my interpretation is she has disgust towards her opponents. But either she's been coached or she knows you shouldn't show the disgust. So she's trying to conceal it, and it only occurs in micro-expressions. What does it mean that she feels disgust? Incidentally, McCain never showed disgust. He showed anger at times towards policies, but never disgust. In fact,
well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, and I mentioned it last hour, but I'll go there again, because I think it's such a big difference between John McCain and President Bush that Bush is always there with his smirk.
Yes.
And he seems to have, and I think you read it in his face and you read it in his body language. I don't know if you've done micro expressions analysis of President Bush, but he's got this look on his face like, "You idiot," or "You child," or "You hater," if you don't agree with what he's saying. And he has it anyway, half the time when he's giving his speeches. McCain.
Well, I never comment on people who are in office, but let me say that let me make two points. One is there is a difference between the kind of arrogance, contemptuous look that you're describing and a feeling of revulsion towards other people. Now, I think the feeling of revulsion for Sarah Palin probably comes out of the religious origins of her beliefs. They're not simply political beliefs. They're grounded in a morality in which she believes, I would suspect from seeing these expressions, that people who disagree, who violate that morality, are repulsive. Now, she's got that under control, but in another clip, which I believe you're going to talk about it, the one leading to energy independence, she shows something similar to what you're talking about in President Bush. But let me wait until you play that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But just to finish the thought and make sure I was being clear, McCain, and I think this is one of the big things that he was consciously trying to do, does not come across like President Bush in that respect. He comes across with respect for people who disagree with him, and I think he's pretty much like that. I've met the man a number of times. So that was one of the things that I thought was very important last night from a facial expression standpoint, with McCain distinguishing himself from President Bush in that respect. But our next clip is actually of Cindy McCain talking about, it's John McCain talking about how his wife Cindy is his inspiration.
Oh, before you get to that, let me just make one more comment on Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
In her very last last part of her speech, where she talks about going to energy independence, she shows a particular expression of being sort of self-satisfied. I know I did a great job, and I'm really feeling good about it. And it wasn't a micro-expression. It was on her face for a couple of seconds. And I think the audience loved it, even though it had an element of smugness about it. She was proud. She felt really good, really satisfied with what she had done in that speech. And she had no hesitation about showing, I did a great job on her face.
All right. Now, John McCain on Cindy McCain.
You know, Cindy said a lot of nice things about me tonight, but in truth, she's more my inspiration than I am hers.
And we're starting to run out of time with Paul Ekman, micro-expression. So be quick on that.
All right. He looked down and smiled. He showed a little embarrassment about such a personal statement, a lovely statement. His wife, we saw her response. She was very appreciative. But he was a little embarrassed about saying something like that in public.
All right. And you know what? Can we sneak in a caller here?
Sure.
This is, I think, one of your former students, Luke in the Bronx, who has a micro-expressions observation of his own. Do I have that right, Luke?
No, not actually. I'm not his student. I did have his DVD and so, or a CD-ROM, so sort of by proxy. Dr. Ekman, so I noticed an expression of disgust also in Sarah Palin when she spoke specifically of special needs children, or she was talking about you have an advocate for, moms will have an advocate for special needs children in her. And it was very, she flared the nostrils. It was very, it was a sneer. And she did it two or three times. And my wife and I were shocked to see that. So I wonder if you picked that up or if you agree with me.
That's what I was commenting on. And I'm delighted that using the CD, you're able to learn to be able to see those things.
Well, yeah, I'm a doctor. It's very useful if I can give you a plug. It's very useful to me in my practice. So.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, but what do you think, how would you interpret it? She was specifically speaking of her child and her special needs.
I think she has a good deal of contempt for people who do not make the choice that she makes, the choice to raise that child, not to abort that child or not to put it in an institution. And she feels very strongly that's the right thing, and everyone who does anything different is beneath contempt.
All right. Lou, thanks for calling us. And body language and micro-expressions expert Paul Ekman, this has been really interesting to have you on last Friday at the end of the Democratic Convention and this Friday at the end of the Republican Convention. Look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure.
Now, it was not exactly Chicago 68 here in St. Paul this week, but as we've been following, the protests here were in some cases pretty large, in some cases included incidents of violence, and in some cases they raised questions about the behavior of the police. There were hundreds of arrests, including 300 yesterday, plus about a dozen journalists were detained, including from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, the CBS radio station here, or television station here, WCCO, the Associated Press, and earlier in the week, Democracy Now! Anchor Amy Goodman and two members of his crew. So let's try to sort out the week in protest and policing with Fred Mello, public safety reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and WNYC's Bob Henley. Bob was here most of the time and is back in New York now. So, Bob, hello again from St. Paul. And Fred Mello, thank you for coming back on with us.
Thanks.
Don't associate me with the competition. It's the St. Paul Pioneer.
Oh, you're with the St. Paul Pioneer. I'm sorry. How did I do that? You are with – there are two pretty good newspapers here, I dare say. And I don't think
lucky.
His microphone is on. Can we fix that? Okay, we're going to try to get Fred's microphone on, and I'm particularly interested in getting your story of what happened yesterday, as you may have been hearing around your newsroom, since one of your own photographers apparently was among those detained. And, Bob, maybe we should make a distinction between detained and arrested, because
Absolutely.
The articles that I've been reading have referred to both.
Right.
What's the distinction?
Well, the distinction is, in being detained, the police do not have to offer an affidavit that swears and attests to why you are being arrested. Detention offers a lot of flexibility to law enforcement, and it's very controversial. One of the things that we have to keep in mind is that these are, quote-unquote, national security events now since 9/11. And 2004 and 2008 are really templates that show the federal apparatus, the security, Homeland Security people, Michael Chertoff, the man that keeps us safe from hurricanes, is also ultimately responsible for how this event goes. It's funded by the federal government in coordination with local authorities. So it really is the integration of the U.S. understanding of the threat abroad and the threat at home.
Fred Mello, tell us what happened yesterday.
Well, it was pretty interesting yesterday. I mean, there was a rally at the State House. Basically, you had hundreds of people who were under the impression, or seemed to be under the impression, that they had a permit to rally until 8 p.m. Police said, well, it's getting close to 5 p.m., your permit's up. So they obviously wanted to converge on the RNC. They were basically trying to find funnel points over Interstate 94, and they couldn't. They were blocked at each point. As the night wore on, the confrontation, kind of the tension, escalated with police, and eventually you had 200 or 300 people arrested, many of them on the Marion Street Bridge. And there was some violence. I believe there was some spray used.
So the way you describe it, it almost sounds like police closed off any place for the protesters to move toward,
exactly,
and then arrested them for not moving toward them.
Exactly. They were basically prevented from getting downtown. I mean, that was their goal, and they kept looking for different access points.
And what about the journalists, including from the AP and from your own newspaper and
right,
from WCCO-TV? What about these detentions?
Right. Well, earlier in the week, I think we saw people that were detained for a day or more. There were a couple students from, I believe it was the University of Kentucky student newspaper, that spent at least a day in detention. What we're seeing now, or what we saw yesterday, was we had a reporter, Ben Garvin. He was held for maybe 2 hours and then released. When I was in Minneapolis, I was ordered to my knees at one point, and then I said, hey, I'm media. They said, all right, get out of here.
Why was your reporter Ben Garvin detained for 2 hours?
You know, I've yet to speak with him, but I assume it was because he was doing his job. He was taking photos on the front lines, trying to get pictures of a historical moment when people are converging or trying to converge on a national convention. They're basically using what they consider the highest form of freedom of expression.
So is your executive editor yelling and screaming to the police department about this detention?
Well, I don't think anyone's yelling or screaming. We certainly have a company attorney that we get involved. And last we heard, he was going to be given a misdemeanor citation, which is not something I'd want on my record.
And a dozen journalists, and we'll talk about the Amy Goodman story in a minute, but, I mean, you know, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, WCCO Television, you know, this isn't exactly the Socialist Workers Daily.
I would like to think I'm not a terrorist. I would like to think I'm doing my job when I document history, and that there's an important kind of part of the democratic process to being part of the Fourth Estate. At the same time, what the police will say is, we're not going to stop and say, wait, are you media? Are you protester? What are you? When we say clear an intersection, clear an intersection. So there's going to be some tension there. Obviously, as a reporter, I'm a little biased. I don't want to be arrested doing my job.
Bob, how does this look to you back in New York now after what you saw in person earlier in the week?
Well, I think we said earlier, and when we talked about this on prior broadcasts, that there is a conflation going on here where there were 100-some-odd groups involved in protest involved with St. Paul, and yet to the police they looked the same. Indeed, there were some people that wanted to do some very violent things and did need to be stopped. That's true. At the same time, you have the Fourth Estate and reporters basically trying to pursue the story and document what happened. I mean, I think what's scary here is the national narrative is, if you're a reporter, you belong inside the Pepsi Center. You belong inside the place where the programming is provided for you. You do not need to be outside of the building with the rabble. Because in both cases, they created a situation where you couldn't get outside. It was like a kind of feudalism where, in one case, there was like a river and a moat, and it was so distant from the civic structure. So what we see here is, really, the militarization of our democracy, where you have the police who are afraid and demonstrators who are afraid, and violence happens in that environment. I mean, I think that what I found interesting was there were protesters that were nostalgic, quite frankly, for the NYPD's course of action and style from 2004.
You mean you think the St. Paul and Minneapolis police had a heavier hand here this week than Ray Kelly's police force in 2004, despite all the brouhaha since about the sweeps that week?
I think that if you – was there tear gas deployed? Did you have the battlefield images of police officers on their knees holding on to protesters and then protesters pulling the protesters back, their fellow protesters back from arrest, pepper spray used indiscriminately, batons, concussion grenades? I mean, I was here. I didn't see that.
And all of those things were used in St. Paul this week?
Absolutely. And the problem here is that we're really not going to know the full story because all of the warrants that were executed, the one that we documented on your air just a couple of days ago, we won't know what the motivation was until the affidavit of that goes with the search warrant is open, because we still won't know, like I guess a couple of days into next week, what the rationale was. I mean, we really do have to look at the implications of this for our democracy.
Fred Miller, you're nodding.
Well, I was looking at some numbers today on arrests, and they only tell part of the story. Obviously, these are different protests, different cities. But if you look at New York, there were 1,800 arrests 4 years ago at the RNC. If you look at Denver this month, there were 150 arrests. So there's two very different ends of the spectrum. We were kind of in the middle. We had 450 arrests.
800 is what I got from – I have to say I got 800 when I talked to Walsh this morning. That was a total readout for the total time.
Well,
in St.
I think, I think there were, well, just judging by your paper, St. Paul Pioneer Press, 300 yesterday, yep. About 100 after the Rage Against the Machine concert on Wednesday.
Yeah, I misspoke. 800. 800 is accurate.
Well, I guess my point here is that what you have to look at the percentage of people participating in protest. New York City had between 800,000, 600,000 to 800,000, maybe a million in the streets protesting. And how many arrests were there? 1,800 is a percentage? I mean, and while there certainly can be a reasonable debate, and there is one going on in the courts right now about the kind of detention that went on, in terms of the number of injuries, only a police officer was injured here in New York. I don't remember any mass casualties from protesters. I mean, we had a colleague, Brian, who was pepper sprayed in Denver, Antoine Faisal, who was also credentialed.
That's right. And, of course, we had him on the show to talk about that experience. Now, we've been dwelling on the journalists. What about the other people who were arrested? There was violence. There was ugly violence. And we talked about this earlier in the week, too, Bob. There was dangerous violence on the part of some protesters who were obviously here to make trouble. So maybe there was more of that here than there was in New York.
That I think it has to do with how good the intelligence was on the part of the police. One of the things you saw in New York was when an individual looked like they might be trying to do something, they were isolated from the crowd. So I think once people mask their identity in public, and that's what the protesters, this handful, and again, it was such a tiny fraction. I mean, you're talking about on the big march, the peace march from St. Paul Capitol down from the Green down to the Excel Center. What a beautiful tableau. 10,000 people had worked months to create this march, very peaceful. And very articulate in their presentation. And on the margins, just maybe dozens of individuals who had another agenda. And that agenda was about provoking some kind of violence from the authorities as some kind of way of demonstrating that, you know, that we live in an oppressive state. They had a different agenda. And I watched mightily as the marshals for the peace parade worked so hard to keep the group away from these folks that had another agenda.
Does the experience here then in a way vindicate Ray Kelly for something else that he's gotten some criticism for, which was the infiltration of potential protest groups before the Republican convention in New York in 2004, because none of this actually came to fruition?
I think that it cuts both ways. Yes, you can make that argument. But until we know more about the nature of the intelligence program, you could also say that Denver and St. Paul built on some of the assumptions made by the NYPD and got themselves jammed up because they conflated these groups. I mean, one of the common things we see in all police intelligence is confusing the Quakers with the Black Bloc anarchists. And that's a common thread, and we have to sort through that because clearly they catch up the journalists along with the provocateurs.
Now, already over time, but I want to touch on the Amy Goodman situation. Democracy Now! Anchor Amy Goodman and several of her crew taken into custody earlier this week. They, I believe, have actually been charged with things, and they are activist journalists in the practice of challenging the police to assert their journalistic rights, First Amendment rights. I saw Amy yesterday, and she was talking about having her journalist credentials taken away after she identified herself as a reporter at one point after her arrest. There is a video of part of the incident from their own cameras on YouTube that's been widely viewed. One of her crew wound up with a bloody nose. She said, have you reported on that incident?
I have.
Let me ask Fred Miller from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and I wonder how that looked to local media here who may not know Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman. I watched the video, and it looked like she probably crossed some kind of police line that she wasn't supposed to cross. The police told her to go back, and she showed her credentials very clearly, her journalism credentials, and at that point she was arrested.
Right. Yeah, we had a coworker who reported on that a little bit. It made us nervous. I mean, it's nerve-wracking when other members of the media are arrested. Obviously, she's a little more confrontational, I think, than the typical reporter, the typical journalist. At the same time, she was going to defend two of her coworkers. She was going to ask questions, and I think at the press conference the next day, she kind of raised her hand and said, talk about police tactics. The police said, you know, enough out of you. And then someone from, I think it was Newsweek, said, talk about police tactics. So, it makes us nervous. It's a good story. It's an interesting one.
Bob?
Well, I guess I had been earlier at the raid that happened over the weekend. There was a similar incident that had almost happened where the police were pushing Amy. And that I felt that I was able to de-escalate it by just saying, you know, is this reporter a threat to you? And then his commanding officer came out and relieved him and put someone else in place, and it de-escalated. That's the kind of thing that has to happen. You have to be understood. The police have a tough job to do. They were protecting 10,000 people during that peace march, and it was made even more complicated by the actions of these few individuals. And so there really has to be just transparency on all sides. And I think we are going to have to pay attention to this, because the story is going to go ahead. And what happens to these people, I guess, as far as Amy's concerned, she didn't get she got an appearance ticket, but it's not clear yet what charges she was actually hit with. So we just have to not take our eye off the ball and see how it plays out.
All right. Fred Mello, public safety reporter for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, which I've been reading every morning for the last 7 days. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for covering the protests and the police, and for joining us several times this week. WNYC's Bob Henley back in New York.
Thanks
a lot.
Come on home, Brian.
I promise I want to. Just a few more hours and one more segment with one more guest. We'll check in one more time with Nate Silver from 538.com right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. One more guest to round out our 2 weeks of convention coverage, and he is once again Nate Silver, the man behind 538.com, where he breaks down polling numbers and monitors which polls are giving us the right numbers and which we should ignore. He's also been providing us with some pretty interesting insight over the past 2 weeks. And yes, he's the same Nate Silver from Baseball Prospectus. So we'll go behind the numbers. We'll talk a little baseball at the end to make the transition back into real life, if that's real life. And Nate, welcome back to WNYC. And I gather you're in Chicago now, catching up on a little sleep after two convention weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to actually having a little bit of a lull here before we get to the kind of debates and the last kind of stretch run at the end.
Oh, you mean the pennant race?
Well, both. I mean, you know, I might have two Chicago teams, you know, in the playoffs this year, so it's going to be a lot for me to cover, I think.
All right. I have to ask you about a CBS poll that just came out and was getting a lot of airtime last night around McCain's speech that shows McCain and Obama are virtually even now, which would have mean whatever bounce Obama got after his convention dissipated immediately. Is this the Palin pick? Is this an accurate poll? What do you think?
What was weird about that poll is that it came out before any interviews were conducted from the Palin speech or from the McCain speech, which you would think would be the two most important events in moving the numbers. So I would not pay all that much attention to that one poll. It's a fairly small sample size, and looks like, you know, they're kind of, when you interview people during a convention now, you're also going to get a lot more Republicans who are at home, able to answer the phone. So that can influence things as well. I really think it's almost best to ignore the polls until, say, at this point next week. McCain undoubtedly will improve his standing in the tracking polls this year over the weekend, but, you know, that might reflect just a short-term kind of emotional bounce and not really any kind of long-term fundamental change.
Now, we have a listener who sent in a comparison of a few polls which seems to indicate that the Obama bounce only dissipated, according to CBS New York Times, and some other polls have the Obama bounce as real a week later. Do you have a view of that?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, the convention bounce peaks about a week after the convention begins, kind of on the weekend following. So you'd expect, you know, under ordinary circumstances, Obama would have had his highest numbers on Friday and Saturday over the weekend, and they dissipate. With Sarah Palin being introduced and with Hurricane Gustav, with the conventions back-to-back, there are just so many factors that I think everyone's kind of throwing their hands up. But the general principle that, you know, these are bounces. They're not permanent shifts. That's why they're called bounces, because you kind of jump up and jump back down. So, you know, any kind of one day's results shouldn't be read into all that much. And, you know, that CBS poll is a good poll, but it's not one of our highest rated polls. We've kind of gone back and looked at its accuracy over time.
Now, there's a Survey USA poll that I think you told my producers about of 1,061 voters. That's kind of a standard national sample, who watch Palin's speech and ask them to grade it from A to F. What'd they find?
Well, it got a grade. I think it got an average grade point from O, but there were kind of A's in there. I think, you know, 60% of people gave the speech an A, and it was almost exactly the same grade Barack Obama's speech got on Thursday. I don't think John McCain's speech did quite that well last night, but it was a moment. You know, my personal taste, I thought that I'm more of a kind of traditional oratory guy, so I preferred Obama's speech. But there's no doubt that Sarah Palin connected with people and was really the story of the convention. I think if they do get a bounce, and I think they will, it'll be because of Wednesday night, not because of what McCain did last night.
Right. And, you know, another interesting phenomenon, and this is not a poll, but after Palin's speech, at least according to the Atlantic Magazine or Mark Ambinder on their blog, Obama raised almost $10 million in the 24 hours after Palin's speech. And McCain reportedly raised much less than that, like maybe a million or two. And I'm sure the McCain campaign is going to trot out equally, aggressive fundraising. But did you see those numbers, and do they mean anything to you?
I think it means that Sarah Palin, you know, generates enthusiasm among the base on both sides. I mean, she really does whip the evangelical base into a frenzy, but also a lot of liberals really don't like her. And it seems, you know, and she made it very personal. I think they felt with Obama, I think they kind of questioned her standing. And, you know, it's very interesting. I think turnout's going to be exceptionally high, maybe even 70% of registered voters, which could be numbers we haven't seen in this country for, you know, 30 or 40 years. But based on even the traffic on my website, frankly, has been up like 50% since Sarah Palin was introduced. You know, she's a crazy story. I think she appeals to that kind of People magazine segment that might not always vote, but not universally liked. I mean, her approval ratings are good but not great. They're kind of 55 approved, 35 disapproved, which is not terrific for a VP candidate who's supposed to be usually, you know, someone who's just kind of very friendly and stuff like that. So I think she's going to kind of motivate this into an even crazier election.
It's an interesting design of that ticket. McCain, who's trying to be a unity candidate, match with Palin, who's going to be a polarizing figure, energizing people, very pro or very con. All right, we're almost out of time. As you say, we will have to wait a few more days to see how these convention bounces really shake out and compare to each other. But you have the honor of being our final guest from our 2 weeks of convention coverage. And we've been looking back a bit, but I want you to look forward as well and just give us a couple of bullet points here on what to look for this fall in both your areas of expertise, politics and baseball. You have 60 seconds.
I think in politics we're going to see the last debate is a debate on domestic policy. I think it's in Hofstra at Hofstra University. That's an opportunity for Obama to kind of bring home that 1992-style economy stupid message. If he can do that, he might kind of pick up some momentum like Reagan did in 1980. I still think that thing on the calendar looks good for him. Baseball, I have to go with Cubs, White Sox this time. We'll have to see if Carlos Zambrano is healthy.
And I have to say that earlier in the summer, as the Yankees were starting to surge, you came on and predicted that they were still going to come out in third place at the end of the day, and now they're going to come out in third place.
It looks like it. I mean, there are two really good teams in the American League East. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a fun playoffs, at least. I know it stinks if you're a Yankee fan, but, you know, I root for the race. You know, I think that's the team everyone can agree on. Root for the Cubs, maybe. But it should be a fun October.
My board op is holding up a sign that says, go Twins. Twins going to make it? You got 5 seconds.
No, I'm a White Sox fan, so I have to say no.
All right. You can see Nate. Sorry, Chris. You can see Nate Silver's politics stuff at 538.com. Thanks for coming on with us. We'll keep talking.
Thank you, Brian.
And that concludes our 2 weeks of convention coverage. Thanks to Minnesota Public Radio for the use of their facility today. We were produced in either Denver or St. Paul by the sleepless but tireless Jody Avergan, Blake Neshek, and Melinda Worley, with help in Denver from Nathan Lehrer. New York producers Lisa Allison, Paige Cowett, Kate Hines, and Taylor Orsi did half the work with none of the travel perks, with help from Rashida Winfield and J.P. O'Malley. Our team of magicians, also known as engineers, was Wayne Schulmeister, Alan Black, Jason Isaac, Ed Haber, Rod Christensen, Greg Gasparino, and Dodd Whitelock, our webmasters Amy Pearl and Oates Champillion. That was, of course, Kevin Bristow and Debbie Daughtry and Bill O'Neill at the audio controls, with Chris Hegel here at Minnesota Public Radio today. Yeah, go Twins yourself. Brian Lehrer Show's executive producer is Nuala McGovern. Executive producer for news and information of WNYC is John Keefe. WNYC's program director is Chris Bannon. What say we get together and talk in New York on Monday? Brian Lehrer on WNYC.